Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show, Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. Dave Bennett, Steve Brzanich, Mary Vanderbilt here. We've got your riding shotgun with you on your commute to work this morning or getting ready for work, whatever it is. Gary Chico is here. We'll talk with Gary Chico, of course, mayoral candidate who has now got a new job. Lisk, we'll talk with him about that as well as other things. Gary, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Justin, thank you for having me and good to be with one of my favorite sports guys, Dave Bennett.
Oh, you're very kind.
The Chicago teams did a little better in the All-Star game, but we were happy to be there.
Absolutely.
Well, let's start. I want to talk about this because there's a great. We could talk all about neighborhood investments. That's a big issue. I guess the first question I have is, you know, what do you do? What's the emotion like when you lose an election? When you're running for mayor and it's over?
Yeah.
What do you do? Is there a period of mourning? I asked Dave. He said it was hours when he lost treasurer high school, back in high school. But as mayoral, what happens right after you lose?
Look, obviously nobody likes to lose, right? I mean, you get in this to win it. And what happens is as you're in the middle of a campaign, you're running at a pace that you've never experienced before. It's morning through night. It's intensity every hour. There's no letdown. So you're really running at breakneck speed. And then the night of the election, you don't win, and it, boom, goes to zero. So you have to make that adjustment, right? I did it. I love this city, so I stay involved in lots of different ways. And just because you don't win an election doesn't mean you stop being a citizen. Mm-hmm. And you have to find other ways to help out and be a good part of your city. That's what I've been doing.
You know, I've heard from other candidates that it can be addictive, the sort of everyday, the grind, everything that goes into running a candidacy. Do you see it that way, or is it more like, oh my gosh, this is a ton of work?
Well, I more look at it as a episodic thing. Running a campaign, given the number of people you have to touch, you know, the mastery of the issues you have to have, that's an intensity unlike you've ever experienced before. Whether I would call it an addiction, I'm not so sure. But it is certainly unlike anything, unless, Justin, you've run for office before.
I have not.
It's unlike anything you've ever done. But it's also very, very invigorating. You get to meet a lot of people. There's great people in this city. And that is a real high.
Well, let's try that addiction theory. Are you looking to run for office again?
Oh, you never say never. I've never looked at a race that I've taken on without saying to myself, could I do a good job in that office? Could I make things better? Can I serve the people better? And that's the litmus test I use. And so that's how I look at these things. I'm not one of those lifers that has to be in a dog assistant dog catcher, regional dog catcher, state dog catcher. I don't. That's just not my style. I'm not saying it's bad.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people have done it, been very successful.
Right.
But for me personally, I look at it more like I said. Is this a job that I think I can do well at and contribute to the public?
Gary Chico, our guest. Okay, so let's talk about Lisk. This is an organization that's been around for 40 years. You invest in neighborhoods. You take an opportunity to give grants and other money and to development. Why'd you get involved in this organization?
Well, first of all, their executive director, Megan Hart, is a longtime friend of mine who I think is an outstanding. She was a public servant for many years and does a great job of running this organization. I felt that maybe working together with Megan, I could add to what they're already doing, working with a lot of neighborhood partners around the city to make neighborhoods better by investing in them. First of all, planning is one of their strongest suits. They work together with these community organizations that have been in neighborhoods for decades and figure out via plan what's the best thing to do here. Where are we heading? What's our goal? Where are we trying to come out? And after that, it's an implementation phase. And so they've done this in many neighborhoods throughout the city. I was really intrigued because when I was running for office, I heard about all these ideas about bringing neighborhoods back. And then I started to look at the Lisk quality of life plans, and I would wave them around at these forums and debates and say, wait, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here in Auburn Gresham. We don't have to reinvent the wheel here in Austin. These are wonderful documents that have been worked on over long hours by Lisk and community partners. We have the plan here. Let's go to implementation.
It almost becomes, I would think, a There's a lot of, I don't say blissful ignorance, but there's when, especially when it's campaign time, where people say, the neighborhoods aren't getting enough, or nobody cares about the neighborhoods, it's just about downtown. But when you talk about organizations like LISC, and like you're talking about where you see in Auburn Gresham or in Austin, that there are plans and there are community organizations that have been doing things that, that kind of fly under the radar, there is a lot of effort that's being put towards developing neighborhoods.
Well, one of the reasons I'm doing this show and some other shows over the recent weeks is to point out the fact that a lot of people have been doing hard work at trying to plan for their neighborhoods. And now we have to shine the light even more brightly on the need for resources to implement those things. I know that Mayor Lightfoot and her administration cares deeply about this, so hopefully we can use the resources that we have, maybe couple them next to what the city has. We have a lot of banking partners that we work with. We now have federal opportunity zone legislation that'll bring even more capital to these neighborhoods. But, you know, look, rhetoric's great. I love it. I'm as good as anybody with it in a campaign. But we have to take it down a notch and go from the rhetoric to the implementation. Let's not just talk about the need for a grocery store. Let's build one. Let's build more than the couple we've talked about. And that, I think we can do that.
Okay, so what do Chicago neighborhoods need? I mean, we talk about grocery stores, just mentioned, because that is a big issue when you come to the deserts, the food deserts. Schools, of course, and safety. And we hear over and over about crime and gun violence, that seems to be the one issue that no matter how many resources are thrown at that problem, it's not being fixed.
Well, it has a lot of dimensions. Let's talk about violence for a minute. LISC is not out of that issue either. We do a lot of sports and recreation programming like Hoops in the Hood in neighborhoods throughout Chicago. And we go to the toughest spots in the street, set up our baskets, and start playing. And from that, we culminate in a tournament in August in Grant Park here to determine the champion. But you'd be surprised at the hundreds and hundreds of kids that are playing basketball and keeping them positively focused. But when you talk about violence and all of its dimensions, clearly there's a lot that can be done. Put the policing on the side for a minute. Obviously, you need that because some of these people who are perpetrating the shootings, you're not going to save them with a basketball, right? So you have to deal with that so we keep other people safe. But do we need to have businesses on commercial thoroughfares that stay open at night with the lights on? Do we need to have goods and services available conveniently to people that live in, let's just take Auburn, Gresham, and Austin, because we have two great plans there. Do we need to have businesses there where people can conveniently get things? Do we need to have businesses where somebody can get a job, a summer job? A young kid, like opportunities I had working in a gas station when I was a kid. Those businesses start to shape you and mold you in a positive way. When those things aren't there, you drift off the track, you get into trouble. So one of the things that we want to do at LISC is look more at helping small businesses come to life according to these plans that we've put out for various neighborhoods in Chicago. Now, how do you do that? You just don't wish it. You have to have people who are entrepreneurs. You have to identify a pipeline of people who would like to do these kinds of businesses. We have to look at their financials. We have to look at their credit. We'll have to take some risk, maybe make a low-interest loan, maybe even a grant, couple with a bank to help these people get started. But the idea that I would like to see implemented here is to get critical mass in some of these neighborhoods. Not a one-store operation and call it a day. That's not going to do it. You got to do a few blocks at a time. But here's the other side. You don't have such a grandiose objective where it's unattainable.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you we're going to do 10 miles in the next 4 months. But can we do a couple of blocks in a year and a half, 2 years? Yeah, I think that's attainable.
I always think about the south side of Chicago, and I think about Austin is a great example, and the west side of Chicago, but the fact that if you look at a neighborhood like Inglewood in the 50s and 60s, you saw the largest shopping district outside of the Loop. You saw a thriving, you think of Bronzeville, you think of even Austin, I mean, you talk about. And now you look at it, and over time, we have seen the disintegration of those neighborhoods, meaning those shops you talked about, goods and services, keeping the lights on.
Yeah.
Why do you think that happened?
Oh, I think for lots of reasons. I'd be lying if I didn't say that racism wasn't a part of it. Obviously, activities like redlining, which LISC addresses quite a bit. I'm really happy about that. There's been a lot of practices in the past and a lot of behaviors of people that have led to those things. But, you know, I'm happy to tell you that if you look at certain neighborhoods, neighborhoods go through cycles, right? If you look at the history of not only Chicago but the country, there has been episodes and cycling through of different periods of neighborhoods. Bronville's resurging right now, thank God. Inglewood has a tremendous amount of investment taking place in it right now with a new school, New Inglewood High School on the horizon. Parks. I mean, all of these things work together to bring us back. And then you have to be careful that when you don't get this engine of economic and redevelopment going, you don't cause this gentrification cascade pushes everybody out.
Right.
So this is a balancing act. I like to see people working together, living together. I really enjoy seeing that. I think that ought to be our goal.
I had a great opportunity to talk with Reverend Brazier in Woodlawn not too long ago, a neighborhood just west of Hyde Park or right in that area.
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot of the same type of thing. They're thinking of Woodlawn in the future. They know that the Obama Center is coming soon, and the conversation is about how do you plan this? What do you want your neighborhood to look like in 10 years? For LISC and celebrating and investing in and developing these community organizations, how important is it for for those organizations to take stock or take ownership of what they want their neighborhood to look like in 5, 10, 15 years?
They're the owners. They're the catalyst. They're the impetus. LISC is not the impetus. LISC is a partner, an assist to those very organizations that have had deep roots in neighborhoods for a long, long time. Byron Brazier, great guy, even knew his dad before that, Art Brazier. What they have done there in building their church and its associated operations has been such a huge anchor. Now the idea is to tie that up with University of Chicago activity, Obama Center activity, and make something bigger out of it. But I think the people in the neighborhood have a very valid point. Don't just cause this rush of a development, and then people who have been here for 30 years are now gone because the rent went from 800 to 2,800. We can't have that. We got to be real careful. I think people raise a lot of valid points about that. That's got to be addressed. So we want to see development catalyzed. We want to see things happening. I think it makes for health. We certainly need it in the tax base of our city. But more importantly than that, there's the human element. We need young kids who are walking, playing, riding their bikes in these neighborhoods to be able to stop and get an ice cream cone, right?
Right.
Last night I was in Oak Park with my family. You know, they were getting a bite to eat. That's a great example of how things can work. All income levels, all races, people getting along, having a very nice time, stores, get an ice cream cone, get a coffee, get a dinner. This is what we want to see our neighborhoods looking like. Devon Avenue is one of my favorite examples. You want to see something go on? Go to Devon Avenue at 10:30 at night and watch it come alive.
Yeah, right.
For a couple-mile stretch, the lights are on, restaurants close. It's really exciting.
Gary Chico, our guest here on the Steve Cochran Show. We'll take a quick break. Stick around, and we'll come back and continue the conversation because, as you mentioned, taxes. Talk about a lot of sticker shock as many Chicagoans are getting their new tax bill this week. We'll talk more with Gary Chico here on the Steve Cochran Show. Stay with us.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. Gary Chico, my guest in studio, and Steve Cochran Show. I'm Justin Coffin in for Steve today. We're talking about developing neighborhoods, and that's really what you're doing with your new post at LISC, LISC.org is the website. One of the issues has to be taxes, of course, and taxes in schools. These are issues that have both helped and hurt Chicago neighborhoods for years. You perch at CPS, very famously here in Chicago, the takeover in 1995, you and Paul Vallis. The idea that the tax bill is going to go up, and you're seeing so many different neighborhoods on the north side and the central part of Chicago have sticker shock, where there are 10-15% increases in their tax bill. A lot of people say, well, this is too much because I'm not seeing anything return. I'm not seeing a return. It's the same services that were provided yesterday I have today. And now I have to make a decision what I want to do with my kids. I'm thinking about schools. Now it becomes an easier decision for some of these families to leave Chicago because the tax rate's the same as, say, the western suburbs or the northern suburbs. Sure. So how do you compete if you're the city of Chicago or neighborhood to keep some of this tax base?
One of the things I've always tried to do is make sure that people felt they got value for their dollar. Whether it was my time at Chicago Public Schools, where we created a lot of different school programs for people, whether it was the International Baccalaureate program in your school, whether it was a new Skinner School, whether it was a new Northside, Jones, Walter Payton, Gwendolyn Brooks. Why? You have to listen to people. You can't govern tone deaf. And people said to us, we want high-quality schools for our kids. Now, I am totally with the neighborhood school concept. I mean, you live in a neighborhood. I live in a neighborhood. Your kids, my kids, should be able to walk to that school. no matter what it is. I don't care if it's Whitney Young or Lane Tech. You should be able to walk there if you're a resident. You get some preference because this is the idea behind a neighborhood school. We need to get back to that. You need to have some comfort that you're going to be able to get your child into a school that you're comfortable with, that they're going to be educated well in, and you won't feel so bad about that tax bill. Now, taxes going up, there's an inevitability to some of this, right?
Right.
But if you feel that you can go to your neighborhood park and it's well-maintained and there's some programming, if you feel that you see a police car ride by every now and then, you get to know the officer, if you feel that your children can go to school, and even if you don't have children in school, but at the end of your block, a couple of blocks down, is an elementary or a high school that's well-maintained and doing a good job, you feel okay about, look, it's taxes, we're citizens. You have to contribute to paying for the government. And so, but you have to feel you got value for it. And once we lose that equation, it's a bad spot.
Well, we saw during the Emanuel administration, the largest school closings in history, and most of those were neighborhood schools.
Yeah.
How do you develop a neighborhood if you do not have a school as an anchor?
I think a school is a critical part of any neighborhood redevelopment initiative. We at LISC, and whether I was in the government or not, always looked at schools as a part of the program, just like we talked about a little bit earlier about Englewood. I have seen what school. Look at Skinner in the West Loop, okay? I worked a lot with those folks, and they do a fabulous job. But if you don't have Skinner in the West Loop, then what's the balance there? Where do the people go to school? Do you have to get on a bus? Do you have to get in a car and drive miles? That doesn't work.
Right.
So we need to have good, functioning schools that the citizens in that community feel some confidence in. So schools are a critical part. Parks are a critical part. One of the first encounters that a young parent with a child will have is going to the park, whether it's pushing your child in the swing or going to an organized program like tumbling. I mean, so we have to make sure this works a lot earlier than school age. And then you have to see what I want to have in this city, I think a lot of people want to have, is universal pre-K. Long before you'll ever have the trauma of worrying about what high school your child's going to go to, you have the trauma of where do I put my little young child, you know, for the first bit of schooling. We should have that so conveniently available to people throughout this city. It's something I've always worked on, even when I was state school board chairman. We put money in that program to make that, to come a little bit closer to that ideal. To me, that's a good functioning city. You want to see a healthy neighborhood? What I hope to also bring to LISC in the repertoire is good early childhood programming.
There is so much we can talk about. One, obviously, you know, Pete Buttigieg today, the mayor in South Bend, he put out a new program about racial inequity. Mm-hmm. And when you think of racial inequity, you have to think of Chicago, segregation, one of the most segregated cities in America.
Yeah.
When you think about some of these neighborhoods, and we can have all the conversations we want about Skinner and the north side of Chicago, but when you're talking about developing neighborhoods, race has to play a huge role. How do you handle developing a neighborhood when there still are racial inequities?
I think you have to go about it by dealing with some of the obvious problems. I mean, we've looked at racism and lending, right, over the years. I mean, Congress has even stepped in to legislate there. The Community Reinvestment Act requires banks to put money into areas that are not their sweet spot, so to speak. I think you have to do those institutional things, and I think we also have to set some ideals and some goals for ourselves that people have to be able to live together. I mean, we have to talk about it. We have to live it. We can't just, you know. I live downtown. In my building, we have every race, ethnicity, age you can think of. This is the way it's got to be. It's got to be this way in all neighborhoods in Chicago. This is why, look, I'm worried about gentrification in a lot of neighborhoods. But if we can come to a balance where we have people with this income and people with lesser income, elderly, young people, parents, this is going to be our ideal. And this is what we have to strive for. So you have to talk about it, and you have to live it.
There you go. Gary Chico just recently announced that he's joining LISC.org, LISC, which is a group that helps with community organizations and neighborhoods when it comes to investment and development. Gary Chico, great to see you. Thanks for coming in studio,
Thank you,
and continue the good work, and we will talk soon.